What was the conclusion on chapter 16? Who remembers that? Wait a second, you weren't even here. But you remember it anyway. Wait. What is the conclusion of chapter 16? And follow the Shastra. Right. Now, if you remember, which chapter was it that discussed the banyan tree of the material world? 15. Now, if one was elevated on that tree, meaning closer to the spiritual, he would be over here, for instance. And over here is the spiritual. And this tree, as we discussed, is the reflection of the material world tree, is the reflection of the spiritual. So that area of material bodies or material situation closer to the spiritual are those of which mode of material nature? Excuse me? Goodness, right. Very good. And the ones down over here, these are the demonic quality, the demonic situations and material bodies born out of the mode of ignorance and passion. So these two extremes on the tree of the material world were filled in chapter 16. Now, what is the situation in between? What type of people are in between? Now, Arjuna asks an interesting question at the beginning of 17. He asks, what is it Arjuna inquires, O Krishna, what is the situation of those who do not follow the principles of scripture, but worship according to their own imagination? Are they in goodness, in passion, or in ignorance? What is their situation? Now, the question is very interesting, because we often say, and often the Hindu philosophy says, that it's not exactly what one does that's important. It's the faith that one has in what he's doing. Now, this may seem like a very strange philosophy, but faith in what one is doing is considered very important in contemporary society, and faith in oneself. Now, all those in the West, there are so many of those self-help books and power of positive thinking. And these direct someone to put his faith in himself. And by having faith in oneself, one is going to achieve good results. But not exactly good by the standards of the Bhagavad Gita, but one can actually get what he wants. So Arjuna is asking, what happens if someone actually places his firm conviction, his firm faith, in something, but it's not as the scriptures dictate, which is the important thing mentioned by Krishna at the end of chapter 16. Krishna exhorts Arjuna to follow the conclusion of 16, to follow the scriptures that will bring one up and elevate one to the mode of goodness and ultimately to surrender to the Supreme Person in the spiritual world, and to avoid those qualities that will lead him down into hell. Trivedam narakshedam dvaranam nashinam atmana kamas krodas tatha lobas. These three gates to hell, Krishna tells Arjuna to avoid. So to go up, follow the scriptures, and to avoid being pulled down, avoid those three gates. Now, if one doesn't have faith in the scriptures, it's clear what happens to one who does have faith in the scriptures. But if one doesn't have faith in the scriptures and doesn't follow them exactly, what is his fate? Is he up here if he firmly, completely believes in something? Or is he down here, a demon because he's rejected the scriptures, trapped by the mode of ignorance and passion? So this is Arjuna's question. Now, if you refer to your summary, after discussing Arjuna's question, in section A, and Krishna immediately answers it with section A, then Krishna, B, C, D, E, he relates 1, 2, 3, 4 basic qualities of a man, of a civilized man. B, C, D, E. In A, he talks about one's modes determine one's activities, and one's modes determines one's activities, the faith and worship in the modes. And then the rest of the sections, other than the last one, foods, B, C, sacrifices. Everyone has to eat something. So what his situation is going to be determined, as Krishna explains, by his modes. And he's going to be placed, according to his modes, somewhere on the banyan tree of material existence. If one has a predominant situation of the mode of goodness, his tendency will to be arise. He'll tend to seek his sense objects based on those modes. He'll tend to worship according to those modes. He'll tend to perform his sacrifices, his austerities, his charity, according to those modes. And therefore, he'll tend to go up. And if one is situated in the lower modes of nature, he's going to perform these activities in those modes, and he'll tend to go down. So this chapter it fills out the tree of the material world in relationship to the soul's entanglement within the material world and his entanglement within different material bodies and his transmigration. So it fills out the picture, and this chapter thus completes the basic message of the Bhagavad Gita by rounding out the different mixtures of the modes of material nature in the world. Now, Prabhupada has described at different times that there are how many modes of material nature? 3. Goodness, passion, and ignorance. And goodness is compared to which color? You know, Madhavi Prabhu? Yellow. And passion compared to which color? Red. And ignorance compared to which color? Blue, right. So when you take these colors, 3, and you mix it with different proportions of red, yellow, you take goodness, passion, and ignorance, and you take goodness, passion, ignorance over here, and you mix with this ignorance, you mix some passion, and you mix some goodness, and then you take another mixture of mixing passion with goodness and with ignorance, and by these different mixtures, mixing the 3 into 3, you get 9 different possible combinations. Then when you mix those 9 different combinations together of different shadings of each and different proportions of each, you get 81 different possible combinations. And then, although we usually stop at 81, of course, we can mix more subtle and subtler shades until there's unlimited different combinations of modes of material nature that can affect any particular soul trapped within this material world. And therefore, at times we find someone whose modes basically agree with us, but there'll always be some differences. They may agree with us exactly if we're looking at it from the 9 or the 81, but subtler, in a more subtle way, there'll be different shadings of the modes that will be different than ours. And thus, each individual gets an individually tailored material body and material situation within the material world.
Is there any reference in the Vedas how they come to the calculation of
8,400? Well, I don't know it. I heard Prabhupada say this. 81 gives us 8,400,000. 81 different varieties gives us 8,400,000. I don't know the exact relationship. Okay, so let's start reading the first section. Arjuna inquired, O Krishna, what is the situation of those who do not follow the principles of scripture, but worship according to their own imagination? Are they in goodness, in passion, or in ignorance? The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, according to the modes of nature acquired by the embodied soul, one's faith can be of three kinds, in goodness, in passion, or in ignorance. Now hear about this. O son of Bharata, according to one's existence under the various modes of nature, one evolves a particular kind of faith. The living being is said to be of a particular faith according to the modes he has acquired. Men in the mode of goodness worship the demigods. So Prabhupada begins immediately explaining from faith comes worship. And according to the modes that affect one's faith, one will worship in one way or another. And that worship, of course, will be of goodness, passion, or ignorance, or the mixtures thereof. Men in the mode of goodness worship the demigods. Those in the mode of passion worship the demons. And those in the mode of ignorance worship ghosts and spirits. Those who undergo severe austerities and penances not recommended in the scriptures, performing them out of pride and egoism, who are impelled by lust and attachment, who are foolish, and who torture the material elements of the body as well as the supersoul dwelling within, are to be known as demons. Even the food each person prefers is of three kinds, according to the three modes of material nature. The same is true of sacrifices, austerity, and charity. Now hear of the distinctions between them. Now, when reading this, we begin naturally to place ourselves and others in some position in the material world according to the modes of material nature and try to understand what our tendencies are. And most people, of course, there are people purely or almost purely in the mode of goodness, and there are also people who are complete demons. There are some like that. But most people fall somewhere in between with some particular unique combination of the modes of material nature. So by understanding one situation in the modes, one can learn to prescribe for himself a gradual process. He can understand where he is, and then he can understand what he can do. Because remember, in the end of the 16th chapter, after the divine nature was described, and then the demoniac nature is described, then in the third chapter, it's basically one of advice and giving us a choice. Because Krishna explains that the divine qualities elevate us and bring us back home, back to Godhead. But the demonic qualities put us in such a situation that Krishna personally pushes us down to hell again and again. Tanaham dvishata kroran samsadeshana radama. Krishna personally, he says, pushes the demonic, mischievous Naradamas down to hell. And the purport is interesting how it's, Prabhupada explains this is Krishna's kindness and fairness. But in any case, so which do we want? To be personally, to reciprocate with Krishna in this way? By having him pushing us down, envious demonic people? Or do we want to be elevated? So this choice is given to us after clearly explaining the results of being in one or the other of this divine or demonic mentality. And then Krishna obviously explains how to go upward, because naturally we'll want to go upward by following the shastras and avoiding the three gates leading to hell, lust, anger, and greed. So in this chapter, we see the middle picture again. And yet, we'll want to elevate ourselves, obviously, and because the mixtures of passion and ignorance tend to push us towards lust, anger, and greed, and we want to avoid that. So we'll want to elevate ourselves. So here we'll place ourselves naturally in one or another of the combinations of the different modes through understanding our tendencies by understanding the food, sacrifices, austerities, and charity in the modes. And then, in the concluding section, in F, Krishna explains actually the purpose of the of his explanation of the divisions of faith, and we'll get to that right at the end.
Okay. Divisions of faith.
Well, that's the divisions of faith. That's what this chapter is entitled.
Maybe you'll cover how you get from the faith into the food and ceremony.
How?
Giving us the connection between faith and food.
These are basic elements of a man. Everyone eats. Everyone has some kind of faith, even if it's the I believe myself, as one man once told me, I believe in myself. This is my faith. Yeah.
It says there, Maya has two types of ruling of energies. One is called, my pronunciation is even bad, but it's like Avacharatika, and then Avacharatika. One is the covering potency, the Abhidham Jnana Ekena Jnana Nivarana. It covers the consciousness of the ruling energy. Lust is the cholera. So one has a certain faith according to how much it's covered, more or less. That will determine also what he likes to eat.
The covering determines it, not the faith.
So the covering will determine what kind of faith he has.
Right, but the covering determines the faith, but it's not that the faith determines the food. But the covering determines the food. Just like if someone has a pig's body, that particular type of a covering, he'll have an attraction for a particular type of food, or a tiger's body, or a human's body. It's the covering that determines the, not the faith. I think that was his question. What's going on over here, Jamashtami? What mode, what covering is this? This is the uncovering. It really is. Anyway, why don't we save the questions and comments like this to the end. Now, even the food, we'll start with eight. We'll just quickly read. The sections go very fast here because it's the foods, the sacrifices, austerities, and charity. So between 8 and 12, 8 and 12, these things are described. So I'll read them quickly. Foods dear to those in the mode of goodness increase the duration of life, purify one's existence, and give strength, health, happiness, and satisfaction. Such foods are juicy, fatty, wholesome, and pleasing to the heart. Foods that are too bitter, too sour, salty, hot, pungent, dry, and burning are dear to those in the mode of passion. Such foods cause distress, misery, and disease. Foods prepared more than 3 hours before being eaten, food that is tasteless, decomposed, and putrid, and food consisting of remnants and untouchable things is dear to those in the mode of darkness. Then Krishna goes on to sacrifices. Of sacrifices, the sacrifice performed according to the directions of scriptures as a matter of duty by those who desire no reward is of the nature of goodness. But the sacrifice performed for some material benefit or for the sake of pride, O chief of the Bharatas, you should know to be in the mode of passion. Any sacrifice performed without regard for the directions of scriptures, without distribution of prasadam, spiritual food, without chanting of Vedic hymns and remuneration to the priests, and without faith is considered to be in the mode of ignorance. Austerity, on to austerity. Austerity of the body consists in worship of the Supreme Lord, the Brahmanas, the spiritual master and superiors like the father and mother, and in cleanliness, simplicity, celibacy, and nonviolence. Austerity of speech consists in speaking words that are truthful, pleasing, beneficial, and not agitating to others, and also in regularly reciting Vedic literature. And satisfaction, simplicity, gravity, self-control, and purification of one's existence are the austerities of the mind. This threefold austerity, performed with transcendental faith by men not expecting material benefits, but engaged only for the sake of the Supreme, is called austerity in goodness. Penance performed out of pride and for the sake of gaining respect, honor, and worship is said to be in the mode of passion. It is neither stable nor permanent. Penance performed out of foolishness with self-torture or to destroy or injure others is said to be in the mode of ignorance. Then on to charity. Charity given out of duty without expectation of return at the proper time and place, and to a worthy person is considered to be in the mode of goodness. But charity performed with the expectation of some return, or with a desire for fruit of results, or in a grudging mood, is said to be charity in the mode of passion. And charity performed in an impure place and an improper time to unworthy persons, or without proper attention and respect, is said to be in the mode of ignorance. Now, after describing this, first we'll read the purport here I'll read 23 verses and then the purport. From the beginning of creation, the three words Om Tat Sat were used to indicate the Supreme Absolute Truth. These three symbolic representations were used by Brahmanas while chanting the hymns of the Vedas and during sacrifices for the satisfaction of the Supreme. In the second paragraph. One who acts without following the regulations of the scriptures will not attain the absolute truth. He will get some temporary result, but not the ultimate end of life. The conclusion is that the performance of charity, sacrifice, and penance must be done in the mode of goodness. Performed in the mode of passion or ignorance, they are certainly inferior in quality. So there we understand that there is a gradual process according to the scriptures that teaches us to perform these different acts not in passion, not in ignorance, but in goodness. And then gradually, by doing that, one is elevated towards the Supreme. But actually, that is not the conclusion that's going to be reached. Let's continue. Because we know already, through so many different processes, there's the process or the opportunity for gradual elevation to the mode of goodness, and from the mode of goodness, one pushes on to the transcendental platform. But that, as we have discussed so many times, is not actually Krishna's desire. 24. Therefore, transcendentalists undertaking performance of sacrifice, charity, and penance in accordance with scriptural regulations begin always with Om to attain the Supreme. Without desiring fruit of results, one should perform various kinds of sacrifice, penance, and charity with the words Tat. The purpose of such transcendental activity is to get free from material entanglement. The absolute truth is the object of devotional sacrifice, and it is indicated by the word Sat. The performer of such sacrifice is also called Sat, as are all works of sacrifice, penance, and charity, which, true to the absolute nature, are performed to please the Supreme Person, O Son of Prita. So here, the direct indications of devotional service are given, that the work should be done with the purpose of pleasing, in the mode of goodness, with the purpose of pleasing the Supreme. Anything done, and the last verse, anything done as a sacrifice, charity, or penance without faith in the Supreme, O son of Pritha, is impermanent. It is called asat, and it is useless, both in this life and the next. Receive training under his direction. Then one can achieve faith in the Supreme. When that faith matures in course of time, it is called love of Godhead. One should therefore, this love is the ultimate goal of the living entities. One should therefore take to Krishna consciousness directly. That is the message of this 16th chapter. 17th, thank you. So there is the conclusion of the 17th chapter, that one should direct his energy not through the gradual process of becoming elevated on the tree of material existence, gradually transmigrating like a karmakandi, but one should, by the mercy of the spiritual master, once one is fortunate, he gets in touch with a bona fide spiritual master, he should directly understand the purpose of the gradual elevation and directly take to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thereby cutting completely his entanglement and attachment to the material world. And thus, the 17th chapter concludes, like almost every other chapter has concluded, that we should take directly to the devotional service of the Lord. By the Om Tat Sat verses? Let's see. Okay, you're asking about specifically about what the verses are saying, not the confidential meanings of the verses, right? Okay, let's take a look. Well, Prabhupada uses the word, the absolute truth is the object of devotional service. Let's see the word by words in that. But it's the Supreme, knowing that the Supreme, that the purpose of all these sacrifices is to attain the Supreme. I think... Right, for sure. And that's not really what Krishna wants. Because when one is entangled in fruit of actions, then there is, if one is taking to the karmakanda process, if we remember our chart, or anything entangled with fruit of actions, there's danger involved in that due to attachment, that the detachment never occurs. So therefore, right after saying that, Krishna explains that with anything that is done as a sacrifice, charity, or penance without faith in the Supreme, without understanding that the purpose of everything is to attain the Supreme, then it is impermanent and it's useless. Yeah. That's in the mode of goodness. See, that's why the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance are so detrimental, because that fruit of tendency is so powerful that it tends to pull one down. This chapter is mostly straightforward. That one should perform his devotional service or whatever, or his offerings to Krishna to attain the Supreme. One should be in the mode of goodness, and one should transcend that through devotional service.
According to the Goswami, Om represents the complete absolute truth. A represents Krishna, who is the maintainer of all the entities. U represents Srimati Radharani. M represents all the entities. So in the Vedic literature, when Om is addressed, it's actually directing
what is the Supreme Absolute Truth.
Right, but in so many places in the Bhagavad Gita, if one understands the confidential meaning of it, then Krishna is directly stated. But Krishna is generally speaks things in indirect fashions to try to gather people into his fold, depending no matter what their particular path that they're on, he's gathering them in through his indirect speech. He's of trickiest, I am the trickiest. He's very tricky. So I used to think, or I've heard people express it, that that what Prabhupada's translations are, they sometimes move away from the direct words of Krishna. So that seems to be indirect, but actually it's the most direct because he's actually revealing the confidential purports. And that's directly stated by Krishna in the ninth chapter and again in the 18th chapter with Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakto, that this is actually the conclusion. So he's putting in the most confidential knowledge. Did you have a question at one point or a comment?
Just that sometimes Krishna referred to modal goodness in terms of conditional life, and sometimes modal goodness in terms of transcendental
life. Right. And sometimes, even in the Bhagavad Gita purports, Prabhupada uses the mode of goodness synonymously with Krishna consciousness. Because the general nature of a devotee, a pure devotee, is to act in the mode of goodness. That's his like resting place. And when Krishna wants him to do anything, he'll do that thing, even if it superficially appears to be he's under the control of the mode of passion. So. But that's the general activity of a devotee is in the mode of goodness.
So this can bewilder someone who is not very experienced, since worship of demigods is on the platform of mode of goodness. But what you should reject association with demigod worship.
If the
worship of demigods is in the mode of goodness necessarily, worship of other demigods can be an idol.
Usually it's the mode of goodness because it's done based on the regulations of the scripture, both some high
and that's what Krishna says about the different worships. So your point is that
someone can be confused.
Who?
Someone who is not very experienced in reading it.
If he reads the purports, he's going to be confused. Someone who has any contact with Krishna consciousness, they won't be confused. Prabhupada has written his purports in such a way that it's impossible to be confused about what the purpose of anything is, that we're supposed to worship Krishna. And as we heard about Maharaj Bharat, when he was the Maharaj, he was worshiping the demigods in the mode of transcendental goodness as Krishna's limbs. And there was no flaw in that. The gopis worship Katyayani, impurity. Huh? But we don't worship anyone avidipurvakam outside of their context with Krishna. But it's actually very important that we don't disrespect the demigods and think that it's improper to worship them. Once in Hong Kong, when Prabhupada came, the local Hindu... Who's in charge of the Hong Kong Hindu temple now?
No.
Yeah?
No, it's a young Hindu.
Yeah, long time ago. That's Sharma. He came to Prabhupada. He was always favorable, yes? Nice man. But he came to Prabhupada and invited him to come to the temple, to their Hindu Bindu temple. So there they have deities of Lord Shiva. Who else? There's Lakshmi Narayan and Ganesh probably. Well, I don't remember who's on the other side. But anyway, so Prabhupada asked me if I thought that he should go. So I said, Prabhupada, they worship Lord Shiva there. And he looked at me and he got very angry. Do you tell them not to worship Lord Shiva? I said, no, but they worship him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I said, oh, then I won't go. But just the aspect of worship, that they were worshiping Lord Shiva, Prabhupada was ready to go, and he was ready to get very upset with me. There's so much in the Satsandarbhas, Jiva Goswami's work, warning the devotees not to disrespect the demigods, actually. Because they're Krishna's agents. Yeah, well, we already know about them. They're considered less intelligent. Chapter 9. Intelligence who has been stolen. They're condemned in chapter 9. Because their fruits are limited and temporary, and they go to the demigods. So if they're worshipping the demigods like that, it's foolish. But that's not the demigods' fault. We can't condemn respecting the demigods.
This question that started this chapter, in reference to not following the scriptures, I'm just trying to see the thread through it. Obviously, someone will make it disappointing. It doesn't seem that it's really brought up again.
About the scriptures? The point about the scriptures? It seems to be brought up in a few places, quite a few places. One should perform his sacrifices in the mode of goodness after the annual austerities. That means according to the scriptural injunctions. Two.
But that scripture doesn't mean that he's already interacting with worship of Krishna. Because he can worship according to the revelation of the scriptures, also without understanding that it's a symbol of Krishna.
This is unfortunate. But he said someone could be worshipping according to the scriptures, superficially, really, because and then he doesn't know that the object of worship is Krishna. But by the scriptural process, that's the whole point mentioned in the third chapter, that someone who is attached to material enjoyment, he's worshipping and getting his necessities of life, but he's praying to Vishnu for that and the demigods. So gradually that's the glory of the Vedic culture, that if one is situated in the Vedic culture, no matter what his situation is, if the Vedic culture is set up properly, then he gradually makes advancement towards the Supreme, even though he may not be inclined to worship the Supreme. And therefore, the Mayavadi philosophy has destroyed things so much, because it's preached that you're doing these things, but actually everything is ultimately illusion. So imagine if you think that everything is illusion, how long are you going to take seriously the upkeep of what you're doing? If you think it's really illusion and you're just imagining, it's due to your ignorance that you're thinking that there are the demigods are here and that this world is real. It's actually not even here at all. It's all illusion. So how are you going to take it seriously? And therefore, the Vedic culture gradually collapses because people don't take it seriously and people stop cleaning their yards and Vrindavan looks like the way it is and India is the way it is. It's all messy and no one cares. No one cares about the upkeep because it's only illusion. Why bother with the illusion? And therefore, Prabhupada said, because of Ramakrishna. Because of Ramakrishna, all of Bengal has gone to hell. The potency of spiritual beliefs in India is very powerful. These beliefs have been perverted by the Mayavada philosophy, and in Bengal by Mayavadi in the form of Ramakrishna.